Good evening and welcome, dear ones. Your presences are each a great blessing for all of us. So we come together again this evening to take our place, to engage in a conscious exchange, to feed and to be fed by the impressions given. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of the world. In the name of God, the Father, the Source, all, God the omnipresent, God the immanent, eternally whole and one, yet manifested as the many. Amen. So in reflecting on the fact that our September practice has to do with song and chanting, and with great gratitude to my journey group facilitator who this past week began this week's journey group with a 5-minute recording of Mr. Gurdjieff playing the harmonium, I remembered this reflection on the power of music. And it is from a gentleman named Robert Fripp. And you might ask, who is Robert Fripp? Well, professionally, he was the lead guitarist for a popular rock band in the 1970s by the name of King Crimson. He also happened to be a work student, a student of J.G. Bennett and of Mr. Gurdjieff. And we may ask ourselves, why do we play music before our time together begins? Why do we play it at the close of our time together? It too has an intention along with the rest of the evening. Mr. Fripp says the following in a book entitled Gurdjieff Harmonic Development. It was published in 2004 and actually contains several CDs of Mr. Gurdjieff playing the harmonium. He says, in our time and culture, we approach music variously as entertainment, ambient background to tune out our environment, aesthetic and intellectual delight, sensual pleasure, remembrance of past and happy times, perhaps a cultural event. But music as medicine, instruction manual, promoter of conscience. These are less common views of music. Also relatively uncommon is the notion that the state of the listener significantly determines the degree to which music may enter into our world. Simply, music is only present in our lives to the extent that we are present to ourselves. This implies that the discipline of the listener is as rigorous as that of the musician, if honorably undertaken. Music is a benevolent presence constantly and readily available to all, so wishing to be heard that it calls on some to give it voice and some to give it ears. May we trust the inexpressible benevolence of the creative impulse. So music is medicine, instruction manual, prompter of conscience, a connector with, to, and from higher emotional center. May it be so for us. And with that preparation, we also prepare ourselves further to move into a place of total inner stillness, to receive these new impressions, a rare privilege. How many people are there even living that are interested in these ideas? Am I? If so, will I play my part? Will I be present to myself? Will I work for the future? Will I allow myself to be clothed with these ideas and let them envelop me, all three centers? So very softly, quietly. With back upright, stilled, and contained, we scan our bodies, particularly the small muscles of the face, noticing and then letting go of any points of tension and constriction. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being, as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So we enter into a time of Lectio Divina. And our passage will be read three times with a silent pause in between each reading. God has granted to us precious and magnificent promises, so that by them we may become partakers of divine nature. Having escaped the corruption that is in the world on account of lust and greed, it is not enough to know that another world exists. We must be able to enter it at will. to live in eternity and yet not lose hold on time. Aware that life itself is infinitely richer and greater than all our thinking mind can possibly know about it. The real complete transformation of our being requires a very much greater concentration of higher emotional energy. There are some in the world, though very rare, who are connected to a great reservoir or accumulator of this energy. Those who can draw upon it can be a means of helping others. We understand that to be born of the Spirit is to be born of another neutralizing force than life. A conscious man can hear higher centers and so can follow their unusual intimations and directions. I pray that the eyes of our hearts may be so enlightened. God has granted to us precious and magnificent promises, so that by them we may become partakers of divine nature. Having escaped the corruption that is in the world on account of lust and greed, it is not enough to know that another world exists. We must be able to enter it at will, to live in eternity and yet not lose hold on time. Aware that life itself is infinitely richer and greater than all our thinking mind can possibly know about it. The real complete transformation of our being requires a very much greater concentration of higher emotional energy. There are some in the world, though very rare, who are connected to a great reservoir or accumulator of this energy. Those who can draw upon it can be a means of helping others. We understand that to be born of the Spirit is to be born of another neutralizing force than life. A conscious man can hear higher centers and so can follow their unusual intimations and directions. I pray that the eyes of our hearts may be so enlightened. God has granted to us precious and magnificent promises, so that by them we may become partakers of divine nature. Having escaped the corruption that is in the world on account of lust and greed, it is not enough to know that another world exists. we must be able to enter it at will, to live in eternity, and yet not lose hold on time, aware that life itself is infinitely richer and greater than all our thinking mind can possibly know about it. The real complete transformation of our being requires a very much greater concentration of higher emotional energy. There are some in the world, though very rare, who are connected to a great reservoir or accumulator of this energy. Those who can draw upon it can be a means of helping others. We understand that to be born of the Spirit is to be born of another neutralizing force than life. A conscious man can hear higher centers and so can follow their unusual intimations and directions. I pray that the eyes of our hearts may be so enlightened. And may it be so. You are now invited to share with us what you received from this message. Then give us your gift. Howard, good evening and welcome.
Thank you. And a lot of what I heard, or one of the big things I heard out of that, was neutralizing force. And just remembering that place I can be in where there's consciousness, and then being in the outer parts of centers where there's everything's more mechanical, and life, especially for me, life events seem to be what's kind of continuous second force in the work, and that the work on myself and the spirit, I can be in that place where I can receive the neutralizing force, or I can receive the spirit and be in a different place than that mechanical reaction. And just, I guess, for me is to, the more I can remember that, the more I can self-remember, the more I can be at least in a place to have the potential to work on myself. So,
yes. Thank you, Howard. Thank you. Jim, good evening.
Good evening. This morning when I opened my email, I was immediately attracted to the image. And then seeing it again here during our time of Lectio, I realized how this world of intimation and direction is a feeling-oriented world. And the image captured so many, just a deep sense of the feelings associated with the energies that are available, that are really all right here, right now, that are completely present, available to me, that there's this blockage between that experience and all that color. And I just desire to be released from that blockage with all my heart.
Yes, may it be so. I will join you in that wish, Jim. Thank you. Frida, welcome.
Hi, so this morning's email, I didn't really see the image. I guess because I concentrate on the words, but seeing it on my desktop, it was beautiful. I hadn't seen, I mean, the colors and then the two faces, one facing out and one facing up, and the butterfly. And then I saw a heart. And I guess the more I looked, the more I saw.
Yes.
So that was interesting that the gentleman before me, you know, said that that is what drew him in the beginning, this morning's email. So I guess for me, it's a reminder to not just look at the words, but look at the images. So thank you for that.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Frida. Yes. Sometimes the whole message can come through just by the image alone. Thank you. So we'll take Kieran and then Martin, and then we'll close this part of our time. Yes, good evening.
Good evening. It reminded me of last Thursday's talk a little bit about time and about not linear, and about being able to maybe rise above the world 48 and to be more present to those other realities, and to self-remember, to self-observe, to non-identify, so that we can access those higher selves.
Yes.
And even as we're here, I heard that they talked about being able to access the next world. So, and that, you know, to access it while we're here in world 48. And that's, I guess, sometimes it feels, I mean, we get caught up in everyday life. And so to remind myself to look towards those guides and leaders and writers that have that consciousness already, and that to use that wisdom to rejuvenate and to remind me and to keep me open. And so I guess that wish to, for that higher consciousness, and that wish to stay aware and to use those resources, to utilize them, to be, you know, to be able to even fathom what they're talking about, like last Thursday. And to be, so I wish for that awareness and that consciousness.
Yes, may it be so. Thank you, Kieran. Mm-hmm. Good evening, Martin. Welcome.
Thank you. When I saw the image this morning, for some reason, one of the first things I saw was the author is unknown, but only to God. And the image, while you were reading the image just brightened up for me, and that butterfly, and just all the inspiration that came from just hearing you read it and looking at the image, but then thinking about the artist who also was perhaps inspired at that level that you're reading about, but takes no credit. And I just have to remember that, you know, in the events that possibly I have in my life where I may have had higher emotional center or contacts or something like that, it's not really me. Needs to take any credit for that. It's God. So I just remember that, just that author is not signed. I mean, the artist did not sign that painting. I guess God did.
Yes, God did. Thank you, Martin, for that's a beautiful closure to this particular segment of our evening, and a wonderful introduction into the next one. So we continue our journey to and through the topic of higher body, and how wondrous it has been so far. This evening, I'm very pleased to welcome Mimi Conroy, who will lead us on our continuing journey into higher body. Good evening and welcome, Mimi.
Well, thank you. It's just lovely to be in the Journey School Cloud with you all tonight. Our first order here is to unpack last Thursday a little bit through, offering up our observations, offering up, Robin gave us a great gift on Thursday night. And for a lot of us, it was a continual gift of kind of small shocks where we would all of a sudden realize, I don't understand what he's saying. Bigger things than my lazy brain wants to think about. And so if we can imagine ourselves all in the cloud, the Journey School cloud, and last Thursday night, all of us leaned in and struggled together. And that is more of the work than any of the content that we all were open to. And if you can imagine yourselves all in this beautiful cloud together, Thursday night, we had a bit of work that gave us all the opportunity to come today now with beginner minds. What Robin gave us was he blew the mind a bit. And so the potential is known to us now. And now we do our work here on our bodies, over our own bones. And so holding that space, I'll remind us of our homework. Allow the impressions generated by the paintings of Klimt and the diagrams to be received as food for essence. How do they come to meet you? And then we also had the opportunity to read Four Bodies of Man in Volume 1 and ask ourselves, what is your name? I'd love to hear. David, please.
Yes, good evening. I'm really grateful for last week's class and Robin's teaching, because the teachings about the four bodies, I realized that I never really fully got it. And partly that's because of that lazy mind you were talking about, Mimi, and not being willing maybe to do a little digging and a little extra reading to try and really understand what those diagrams were saying. But the reason I'm so grateful is because I have an understanding now. And I'm sure it's not the most complete understanding, but there were some new awarenesses or new knowledge that came out of it. One being when the direction of the arrow across the diagram of the four bodies is going from left to right, starting with the body, the physical body, how everything flows from that. And I didn't quite understand that. And I puzzled about how the, you know, the emotional center being the next associated, at least with the next box in the diagram. I always thought of that, that body, that second body, as being on a higher level, and the third body higher yet. But in that direction, they're all on the same level. That's the way I understood it. And so it's like it's making sense to me now. And to take in the impression of the upper row, where the arrow moves from right to left, from divine mind, and everything flows from there. You know, when we're in those moments where we're connected probably to higher centers, but we're more in essence, essence has come alive at least a little bit, that it's a completely different experience, and it's an experience of non-identification and self-remembering. So I used that new knowledge last week to practice observing which direction I was going in. and it was fun, and it was instructive and uplifting. So that's my share.
That's beautiful. And it just really shows us the fluidity. We study this in a very rigid manner, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, and, but it's very, very fluid. And, you know, when I discovered after long years of work that observing, non-identifying and self-remembering happened on top of each other instead of okay, I'm observing, now I'm not identifying, now I'm self-remembering. And the beauty of it is that it's a dance and kind of breathing, like you said. Which direction? Well, that changes. And you know what I heard a little bit in my group this week, were some observing eyes that judge what we know and what we don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. And if we can suspend that with beginner's mind, we'll have just what you brought us. So It's nice to be beginning with you again.
Thank you. Likewise.
Jim, please.
Yes, I'm totally new to this. This is my first session of study, but I saw in the tree of knowledge representations of the four bodies, you know, from top down, the carnal body, and then the body of desires and emotion, and then the body of mind and spirit, and finally the divine spirit, which I thought was symbolized by the heart. And then I saw all four bodies connected by arteries, which would channel influences from the higher levels to the lower levels. And this would help develop and grow the essence of the person and help create, grow the real self. Mature the real self. And you know, from what I read and saw in the graphics, you know, the carnal or physical body obeys the influence from the next higher level, which is interior rather than exterior, which is the body of desires and emotions, which in turn obeys influences from the next higher level, the mental and spiritual body. And then finally, from the highest level of consciousness, the divine body. And I'm seeing that in this way, the essence is nurtured the essence is nurtured as successively higher influences feed our essence. And then that essence develops into a real I, the real person that we are supposed to be. And this is how we are transformed. But participation in the nurturing process, we have to participate strenuously in the transformation process. And I got that from our reading today through observation, stepping outside one body, observing it, and by so doing, creating a second, then a third, and finally a fourth, finer body through nurturing influences that transform our essence into who we are. And I found it interesting. I didn't see it in the picture, but I did see it in the graphics that the exterior body, the physical body, is the mechanical body. And those influences are turning us from people who are mechanically reacting to things outside ourselves to people who are consciously not reacting, but responding in a way that is growing us and making us better people. That's what I put together with that that first picture, along with a lot of the reading of that section last week.
Wow. Okay. It calls me to just say right now how our curriculum, how extraordinary it is. And that it's embedded with whatever you need, it's higher impressions, it's all the things that Jim said. And if we come to it knowing what great intention it's all put together, no matter where we are in that moment, there's more open to us just by being humble, just by maybe saying, I don't know. And I'm every week, I'm just moved by our curriculum and just good work, whoever writes it. Thank you, Jim. Welcome.
Thank you.
It sounds like you've been here a while, so I hope to see you
I've
again.
I've been listening to Peter. This is the first time I've really gotten into the study. So.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's good to see you.
Thank you.
Karen, please. Oh, wait.
Yeah,
oh.
Are we good?
Well, depends where you are.
Well, can you?
There you are.
Yeah. Oh, there. Okay. My face is bigger. All right. Well, the recurring theme that is coming to me throughout these last 3 weeks is the individual nature in which these these energies come to each of us, especially for us. And that I'm, you know, I can't do it the Mimi way and I can't do it the Peter way, but I can take the idea and get the idea that if I really humbly listen and know that the messages that I'm receiving are like this gorgeous picture. It's rich in color. It's rich in movement. It's rich in expression. I mean, it just couldn't be more vivid and powerful. And I can, you know, I can feel that movement in my body, and I can feel the intensity of the colors, and then the images that it brings to me, particularly. And I want to say this. It really marks the specific message to this work person about where my individual effort needs to be. And I, you know, not getting sidetracked by the physicalness or the desires and feelings of world 48 and being mechanical about what am I doing? You know, what is my purpose? Where should my focus be? And I like that a lot. And I enjoyed Bernadette's talk the other Wednesday evening. And she also, to me, what I heard was emphasizing that individual responsibility of what my being could be. And so that interests me. You know, it's like, oh, I'm kind of special. And everybody else is too. You know, and that's just such a such a loving feeling, that kind of no matter how I wake up that day or tomorrow or something, that I'll always be given what I need when I can pay attention. And that's it.
You know, while you were talking, Karen, I was reminded of one of the really beautiful things about Tim's ministry to all of us. And when we first came together to do this work, we were all a lot younger and had a lot more personality and a lot more of everything. And at times we would observe ourselves and just like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, And Tim would usually, there are two things he'd say. And one of them was, if you're really up against a wall, God loves you so much. Which is, you know, not really what I wanted to hear at the time. And the other most loving, beautiful thing he would say to us is, God wanted one just like you. And I'm not Peter, I'm not Marianne, God wanted one just like me, with my flaws and my beauty, with everything. So, Karen, God wanted one just like you. Blessings, dear. Jim Moat, hi.
Hi, Mimi. Mimi, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Robin's teaching a lot. But I don't think it was just Robin's teaching. I think it was just the stream of what's coming and what's opening up. And the image or the graphic that most attracted me was this diagram. It was called the Essence Map of Life with Kairos Times. And he explained that in a way that captured my attention, because he was really saying that these Kairos moments are opportune times for choosing, for making decisions. And he even suggested perhaps going back and looking at one's life and examining one's life through the lens of what choices came along that took you in the direction you're in now, that then took you in another direction, and so on and so forth. And so I began to play with that some, and the understanding grew in me as I did. The enthusiasm for that grew in me. That passage in First Peter that we quoted in the email about through these great promises, right? That's all preceded by saying his divine power has given us everything we need. And so I was playing with this, and then I asked the question. I said, well, okay, so what opportunity is ahead of me that I need to hear? You know, what intimation is going to be available to me that I can choose at this stage of life? And I was really surprised by the sense of what came to me. And the sense was preparing for your death. Robin mentioned a book, and I picked it up right away, called The Theory of Eternal Life. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading that, and I'm about halfway through it. And I didn't understand the idea of preparing for my death. In fact, I was a little reluctant to share it because to some it might seem morbid. But I'm coming to understand that everything is in preparation for death, and not death from the standpoint of the end of things, but for my death from the standpoint of opening a door, another one of those Kairos moments, and the shift that'll take place. And the book he recommended explains that in ways that I just would have never, ever comprehended. And so I just am very thankful for what Robin brought, but also this accumulation that is coming through the curriculum, through the teachers, and through really the spirit of this community and all the teachers that have come before I got here. And now I get to pick up on all of that. I'm just very thankful, Mimi.
Well, we all got here when we got here. And if you look back on your life, like you said, you see what had to line up to put Jim in that chair and Mimi in this chair tonight. And what we all have in common is the magnetic center that drew us to each other. And that we have an understanding and are acquiring understanding of the work. The other beautiful thing about the work is it's a very easy thing. Well, for me, it's always been a really easy thing to love. Maurice Nickel, the way he writes, he's like my uncle. And I love his words. I love the work. So automatically, my emotional center shows up. Can I, I won't go there because we're going to go there in a minute. But our being drew our life, and here we sit. So glad to know you. Virginia Maxwell. Hello.
Okay. It may have been in another class, not last week, that Robin had mentioned that he's been in the studying the work since the 80s. And this morning, in thinking about that teacher of 40 years, just exposing myself to the teaching, because I'm not really a chart person and all of that, but opening up my center, the hara, just opening up and exposing to the higher teachings that can come through, even when I don't know it, it makes me feel a little bit smarter, just a little bit smarter and all. And I don't have to know, I can't observe it. When I put words to it, it makes it too small. Mm. So I just want to share that through the years, and Robin had said the work comes through you by osmosis. And I absolutely understand that, slowly but surely, slowly but surely.
Thank you, Virginia. If we feed it, it will grow. And if we love it, it will serve us. Oh, you know, something that just pretty much the most accusatory thing that it offers is that I've fallen asleep. And it's a lovely system. It's nice to see you, Virginia. Becky.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mimi. Yeah, I love what I love that the picture of the four bodies and how the arrows again, what I think the first speaker was talking about, and that how when you come from a way of being, there's so much more choice in that way versus reaction. And I've always, you know, once I started practicing that, which definitely takes practice because it's definitely not a habit, it's not automatic. And I find that I definitely have to pause, you know, and think about how I'm going to respond versus react. But I just wanted to share, it was a real special week for me on the 20th. It was my 18th birthday. Now, I'm not actually 18 physically, but I had a stem cell transplant 18 years ago, September 20th. And it's like starting over. It's like getting a new hard drive. So, you know, because it's a stem cell transplant and the stem cell is the root of the blood. And so they explained it like getting a new hard drive and you're starting over. So they started September 20th and it was my 18th anniversary. My birthday. So, but one of the things that really, and, you know, with multiple myeloma, it was really rare at the time. They had given me about a year and a half to live at the time. And so, but I remember doing some work through another company called Landmark, and it was about practicing your way of being. And I'll never forget a mantra, I guess I had, was that life happens, but you get to choose who you're going to be in the face of it. And I chose life. I mean, and it so altered my experience of going through that whole procedure. I did a clinical study at NIH. We were living in Northern Virginia at the time. But just my whole attitude was so different, you know, and that I chose that I was well and I had a disease to manage so that there was nowhere to get. Like there was no someday, it was now. And I mean, people that through the whole protocol were saying, you know, what is it that's working for you? I mean, you know, the head of the palliative care of NIH ask if he could interview me as with all the interns from the different military services. And I shared this with them. I shared this, that this was some training that I had gotten, that, you know, of really being able to choose your life. Like, you choose who you're going to be. You don't, you know, life happens. So anyway, so I just wanted to share that. So that was a really neat reminder. And I loved that whole thing. And like I said, it does take some consciousness to choose that. So.
Well, and thank you for sharing that with us so we could mark this time with you.
Thank you. Thank
you. You know, and that's just so beautiful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks.
And our last one here is Tracy. Hi.
Hello, Mimi. Yes, it's been a delightful week. I wasn't expecting it to be a delightful week. I opened the email and saw it was the four bodies of man, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've been resisting this teaching for 17 years. and it's something, you know, back to the lazy mind idea, it's just something that it just doesn't want to struggle with. We have plenty of ideas. We have personality and essence, and we have the ray of creation, and you know, we have higher centers, and what is this? Why do I need this? And I decided to lean in on knowledge, the side of knowledge this time. And I was just gonna do it, but I got tremendous force from Robin, tremendous will to this, and just, you know, very eye-opening. So incredibly grateful. The exercise around examining your life and life choices, also very powerful, very powerful. I, you know, maybe 10 choices in my life, and most of those were dead asleep. No real choice. There was no real choice. And it's really interesting to see the pattern, how that aligns to chief feature, and the pendulum, to see the pendulum in that too. Mm-hmm. It's given me so much to work with, and the teachings, I've been wondering about so many of these teachings this week and trying to feel into this second body, and what a gift. I can't even really enumerate the gifts of health and well-being I've experienced this week, and inner separation and deeper sense of freedom coming to this. But I'm actually raising my hand with a question for you. It's a question I've been wondering about since last week, and I wasn't going to ask it, but then when you were teaching and the last time you were with us, you taught on the parable of the carriage, the horse, and the driver, I believe. And I'm just baffled by the overlay of that parable with the four bodies.
Mm-hmm.
That just is.
That's where it came from. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I don't know why in the commentaries I'd never focused on that before, probably because I was so busy resisting this teaching. Mm-hmm. But I've always read that parable as the centers, you know, that the carriage is the body and the horse is the emotional center and the driver is intellectual center. And so I've always looked at it from that lens and the reins in terms of the connection, and balance man is the driver on the seat and knowing which centers to use. And so I keep trying to think about this in light of the four bodies, and maybe because it's so new to me, there's nothing that's resonating against that, but I just thought I'd raise that with you to see if you might have a observation or offering there.
Well, as would have it, it's a good segue into what we're going to start with. And, you know, what I hear from everyone that I've heard from since last Thursday is the amount of effort that we're all making. We kind of saw this place. I saw my mind check out when, you know, this came on or that diagram or this. And if that's all I see,
like Marianne said earlier, it's leagues above the world. We are observing ourselves. That is huge. And so if you can bear not having an answer, and just, I'm going to go back over the, real quickly, the parable, because I got another one to put on top of that one. So thank you, Tracy. So as I said before, the curriculum is just so brilliant for tonight that I'm going to let that do all the pointing to the higher centers that I can only wish with you for. What I can do is give you what this 34-year-old work student does every day in order to be present when the grace comes. And I can know diagrams, I can know octaves, I can know hydrogens. All of these things help expand my connection. But the basics are what I do every day. So I'm going to begin with just a short reading because I read a little too much last time. And this is out of a book called The Rogue Elephant by Bob Hunter. And Bob Hunter transcribed Beryl Pogson's groups like she had done for 30 some odd years with Maurice Nickel, transcribing his groups. And this is called Training the Unruly Beast. In a well-known Gurdjieffian story about a coach, horse, and driver, the coach is taken to be the physical body of a typical man or woman, the horse, the emotions, and the driver, the mental functions. As this driver is an ordinary sort of person, that is to say, lazy, aimless, self-centered, and susceptible to alcohol, as the horse is ill-fed and does not understand the driver's language, and as the coach and even the reins, which naturally are meant to convey the driver's instructions to the horse, are in very poor repair. The horse's movements are rarely guided, orderly, or the outcome of choice. Beryl Pogson's work groups also used a rogue elephant as a metaphor for the force that has usurped the power of man's emotional control center. This beast was found to be a particularly apt choice when emotions were being considered in relation to a person's intellectual and moving abilities. Before giving the reason for this, it might be useful for readers new to the work terminology to explain that the Dicker group, which is where this group met, studied a method of psychological development that considers a person's feelings to be governed by an emotional center, thinking by the intellectual center, learned, that is not innate, bodily activity by moving center, natural reactions and regulations by instinctive center, and reproductive and associated functions by sex center. The door to higher emotions is opened when a person is in a state of self-consciousness, and to higher intellect when in a state of objective consciousness. I'm going to read that one more time. The door to higher emotions is opened when a person is in a state of self-consciousness and to higher intellect when in a state of objective consciousness. depicting the lower emotional center as a rogue elephant, invites the question of how this impulsive, often rampaging animal is to be pacified. Beryl Pogson answered that the traditional way of training a wild elephant, that is, harnessing a tame elephant to either side of it, it suits this work purpose very well. She explained that although we cannot control our behavior and attitudes directly through our feelings, for we cannot guarantee they will not suddenly burst into displays of anger, jealousy, hate, or fear, we could use the other two functions to bring emotional center into harmony. A similar moral can be seen in the horse, carriage, and driver allegory, for it is found that thoughts can influence feelings, so a person can learn how to struggle against negative feelings. All right. We're going to go over a few things here that we've all heard a lot about. And as our friends that testified tonight said that, you know, I've always thought about that, but I just never really thought about. So let's just put on our beginner mind and just listen to a few of the things here that are in our work toolbox, as Donald says. Identifying. This is the hardest thing to see, and people like being stuck to things. Internal considering. This is identifying with yourself, and is easy to see how it destroys one's life. You are imprisoned by what other people are thinking. The work frees you from this. You are in a real part of yourself if you're not internally considering. If you are internally considering, all the other person will see is that you are nervous. When you are identified, you don't make the impression you think you are making. If you are quite simple and not full of fears and anxieties, then the person has someone to talk to because you are present. Self-justifying. This is one of our greatest enemies. It puts us to sleep. It is making excuses, not clear explanations. Negative emotions. Emotions that say no and object. Instinctive and intellectual centers have discrimination. Negative eyes distort the work in emotional center, and then it can't do its work, which is to be clairvoyant and do the will of something higher. Emotional center should be a clear mirror. Tiny children know what state you are in. The negative emotions are learned and borrowed, but with the work, the center can again become a clear mirror. Herein our hope. Negative emotions prevent the will of the work from coming through and being done. Recognize each category of negative emotions. Minor negative emotions, irritation, disappointment, small daily negative emotions. We can see these and are strong enough to work on them. Two, self emotions, self pity that has become habitual, indifference, anxiety. These can be worked on by the ideas of the work. No one is to be pitied because we attract what happens to us. The work dispenses with comparing. A sense of injustice belongs to this, but there is no equality in the world. Instead, there is the principle of hierarchy. Justice can only be seen from the level above. Jealousy, hatred, malice, that leads to violence and fear. And in the one of the meeting halls, Maurice Nickel had negative emotions all written on the walls. And yeah, it's a very powerful thing to learn. Because what we really don't know is that most of them are negative emotions. And I love the simplicity of what they said. It's a no. No. How can I feel that no? How can I taste that no? And that all happens in the present moment. Here's another good one. Wrong imagination. This is much harder to observe, because people don't see how it clouds everything and interferes with every center. We're talking about wrong imagination. It is so mechanical and it distorts thinking. People should find their own form of it. Asked whether self-pity came into it, she replied, "That is nearly always imagination. It is a form of identifying with yourself. It is a negative emotion. It is connected with nearly all the wrong psychic functions. You have attracted your life. No one else but yourself is the cause of this. Self-pity shuts the door. Other people can give you sympathy only when you don't give sympathy to yourself." And my observations around wrong imagination, which has been lengthy, is that how do I know I'm in the wrong part of imagination? Because everything turns out in my favor. And what is there an absence of? Second force. I wouldn't put second force in there if I'm writing the story. I go straight on through to third in my imagination. And so when I engage in this, I am using my force that I might have gained by, you know, the work that I do in my study. I am giving that force away very, very, very cheaply in wrong imagination. And where we think it's just so great, because again, remember, no second force. It's just like dribbling away my force. A very, very good thing to continue to study. Inner talking comes right on in here. A mechanical manifestation, which we really should alter. This is something that is not observed until we come into the work. A great deal of self-justifying goes on. And let me add here that what comes with self-justifying is explanation, just as bad. It's just as, you know. So those two things, I think, go hand in hand. This is something that is not observed until we come into the work. A great deal of self-justifying goes on. If you've had a conversation with someone, don't you often go back over it? It's really work to stop it She added that Nicol had said in a commentary in volume 2, page 744. It said in a commentary that inner talking is always a monologue. There's a clue right there. I loved it when I read that. Whereas an internal dialogue would be a useful practice to cultivate. So this is where my higher intellectual center might, or a healthy intellectual center might come in and be part of that, it says useful practice to cultivate, but I think it's kind of a discernment, actually. Question about pride, Beryl Pogson said, it may be in one's being, but that it may go into a picture of oneself. Is arrogance or self-righteousness a negative emotion? A woman asked. It is the feature of the false personality, she replied. They are acquired and built up. Essence attracts certain features. To provide, again, what we need, the resistance essential to the struggle that can lead to transformation. And so here I am, listening to this, struggling to hear, to find information that might resonate with me. And here we are, 100 and some odd people from all different places, leaning into the same thing and creating force. Well, I think this doesn't give us, I'm just going to go on and could go on and on and on, but let's stop here. It gives us a few minutes here to kind of tie things up if there's any questions. Or it doesn't have any questions. Hi, Matt. Oh, Pamela, hi.
Hey, Mimi. Back to higher emotional center. I have always felt that higher emotional center and higher intellectual center are really just other words for indwelling spirit that connects with spirit, and that awakens the faculties of the soul in a whole different way. And I think Gurdjieff just used those terms because he was trying to avoid the religious overlays and associations. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's helpful for me to think of that is what feeds those centers is nothing conceptual. It's non-conceptual. It's art, it's music, it's Lectio Divina, it's intensive retreats in silence, it's silence in nature, and everything else gets in the way, for me at least. I mean, I'm speaking from my experience, so this is not written anywhere. This is my own experience. And so that's what I pay attention to, and that's what I seek. Because all those things that you just reviewed, once those have settled down, they just go on, and there's no identification with them. They still go on. And so what? But my real attention and intention are on what feeds spirit in me and connects with spirit, greater spirit. And that's all I want to do.
Well, I'll just say a collective amen.
So I don't know if anybody else has that sense of what those higher centers really are, but when I characterize them that way, I know what to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you.
Janine. Oh, Jenny. Janine.
Jeannie. Yes, thank you.
Glasses.
This is probably very elementary, but I'm really confused using that word imagination. So can you kind of give me a little kind of internal imagination process that might be going on that is illustrative of wrong imagination?
Yes. So everything we're talking about is, basically to bring us into the present moment.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And in that moment, I have space to have intention to in other words, I am using my imagination, and Cynthia Brugeau calls it the imaginal realm, mm-hmm. that my creative imagination is an extraordinary gift. But what happens to me when I'm driving a car sometimes is not. I'm making my list to go to HEB. It's just running its thing. I like to check off lists.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily right or wrong, but it uses my force. It uses my precious force. And so at my age, I don't have a lot more time to do certain things. It's like, I don't have enough time left on earth to let my imagination just, make me drool.
Uh-huh.
So you can see it's just an embodied creative thing or a mechanical machine.
Uh-huh.
But either way, what do I use my precious force for?
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, dear. Stephen.
I looked in on the email. I watched the video of the little boy, who I suspect is somewhere between 2 and 3, sitting on his mom's lap, listening to his sister playing Moonlight Sonata. And, there's certain pieces of music that just touch you deeply. And Jill played a couple of pieces at one of our retreats, our welcoming prayer retreat, and just sad music that just kind of touches you somehow. So this little boy who's come through toddlerhood, very familiar with negative emotion, has exhibited it probably numerous times. But as a child, it's not laid down rules yet inside. It just blows mm-hmm. through you. Mm-hmm. Fast, it's over. And then they move on to something else. And you can see he's trying to behave. He's at his sister's concert. But all of a sudden, this music moves him. And he's starting to cry, but he's trying to hold it down. And you can almost see he's searching, like, where is this coming from? And that's higher emotion. Innately present in each of us in its most raw material form, and it's bubbling up, and he's going, I've not experienced this before. This is overpowering. It's sort of joyful, but it's sort of sad, and it's something about bigger than me, and it's vast, and it's that first taste, that inner taste of that. And obviously, good parents probably cultivate a space for a child to apprehend that. But it's hard to describe what higher emotional center is, because it's this there's no words for it. You know, the left brain has all the words for intellectual center, but there's no words for that flood of emotion that you're sorting through and amazed by and puzzled by, and it's mysterious. And you really, everyone should watch that video. It's just a blew me away. So
thanks, Steve, for that, because, you know, and I know you'll know, and anybody that watches it, you can see where the child swells. You can see that happen. And, so definitely watch it. Marcia, can you keep it brief? Oh, you didn't have to hang up. I'm sorry. Oh, there you are.
Mute. I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry. I just want to share that when I watched that video today, I was listening to the music and watching that child's face as big of a close-up as I could get on my computer. And I had the surge of some kind of energy running mm-hmm. through my body for mm-hmm. the next 2 hours that mm-hmm. has now recurred. I can feel this energy coming in every part of me, almost like a blood system. It's going now, and it's in my face, and it's in my feet, and it's in my limbs, and it is phenomenal. And I don't know which one it was, but I've been writing about this and thanking God and praying about it the rest of the day. And I needed to share that about that experience. I'll be in a retreat next week and I won't be able to share about this week's homework. So thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. Enjoy your retreat. So just briefly, I know we have our homework and our work. In the email, listen to something sorrowful, Steve, that opens your heart and helps you feel something higher, finer energies. And then recall an experience of a higher emotional center, write about it, share what you learned. And I'll turn the rest over to Marianne. Thank you all. Your participation made this far greater than I ever imagined. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Mimi, for your gifts, for your being, your presence, and everyone who shared and participate here, even in a silent way. What a blessing. I think no more really needs to be said at this point except to pray and to go into the night with a sense of gratitude. Wherever we are, let us pray the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep, rest in Christ's peace.